ownership meetings are taking place in Arizona, and what that means is our chance to bring you the annual Prioritizing Player Safety is as Real as the Tooth Fairy report. Sorry, kids. That and about everything else we're going to talk about. And with me, as always, as you can see, is the great Trey Wingo and Tony Pauline. Fellas, how you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Okay. Yeah, so as I mentioned, big news coming out of the league ownership meetings last night that had everybody ablaze and everybody talking was that now teams can play two Thursday night football games and have two shortened periods in between games during a season. And as you can imagine, players, including face of the league Patrick Mahomes, issued some pretty scathing statements about that. Roger Goodell, on the other hand, saying player safety is as great as it's ever been. Trey, let's start off with you. What is your take on this Thursday night football decision and Roger Goodell's comments that all is good?
Well, there's a lot to get into there. First of all, just let's be honest about one thing. The Dallas Cowboys have played two Thursday night games in season for a long time now because they're almost always the Thursday night game on Thanksgiving. And then they play and then they are always that does not count as their Thursday night game. I think about 2 years ago after their Thursday game on Thanksgiving, they played a Thursday night game in Minnesota. So the Cowboys, more than any other team, know what this is about. So we need to sort of say, as shocking as it is to hear that, this has sort of happened already to at least one team. All that being said, it's a joke,
yeah,
right? And I think that, well, on one level, it's good for the consumer because this means not everybody has to be on a Thursday night game. And I think that we've seen over the years some stinkers on Thursday night games because everyone had to have one of those. Okay, so what the NFL is trying to do is showcase all the good teams and not have us not pay attention to the bad teams, because we had to pay attention to a lot of bad teams this year. Okay, a lot of them on
poor
Thursday
Al Michaels.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it was poor Al Michaels. I was like, Al Michaels didn't seem to really care. Like there were a few games where he was just like, well, this is it, what it is. You know, he wasn't sugarcoating anything. So that's the impetus behind this. And at least, and we'll get into the flex thing, which was tabled in a second. But it is hard to say. That if you're going to do this to teams more than once a season, that it is logically impossible to say, well, we're going to have several teams play two Thursday night games, which is a shortened week, shortened practice, but you know, players.
Right. And the big issue for me, and Tony, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, because the college season, they play on, we got games on Tuesday nights, Saturdays, whatever. Yep. But the big issue for me is, yeah,
They had 400 people on their roster.
And, you know, Roger Goodell talking about, we're not prioritizing Amazon over player safety, and they, you know, players like the 10-day bye week. But what he doesn't talk about is what's on the other side of that, of the bye week or of the game, which is the 3-day week in between a Sunday game and a Thursday game. To do that to a player's body twice is a problem. I can't even imagine the NCAA would even allow that for college athletes. What's your thoughts on this too?
And listen, you know, as Trey said, it's a 365-day-a-year sport, and that's what they want. They want it more prominent in people's living rooms or on people's computers or handhelds, as it may be. And I'm sure that, you know, that there's not much truth in what he said about Amazon, because if those ratings go through the roof or they get the Thursday night ratings, well, you know what? They're going to get a better streaming deal, whether it be from Amazon or another, another carrier. As far as player safety is concerned, I think it goes deeper, much deeper into just saying, you know, we're going to let teams play more than one Thursday night game. And, you know, I'm looking at you there, Brett, and I'm seeing a leather helmet behind you. And really, to get right down to it, if you want to improve, you've got to take the head out of the game when it comes to player safety. How do you take the head out of the game? Well, you have them wear one of those leather helmets, because the way the helmets are designed now, they're still going to lead with the head. So I think it's more involved than just allowing teams to play a second or two Thursday night games during a season.
Yeah. And by the way, I've heard that from a lot of people, you know, and Jerry Jones, I think, has even said, well, you know, we got to look at the helmet. At the end of the day, with the speed that these guys are playing at, I mean, I don't know if you can take that out, because when those leather helmets were there, people running a 6.5 40. Okay, not a 4.2 40 at 285 pounds. So we're not.
I can't even imagine a world with Twitter in it where someone running a 6.5 40. So
you know you're not doing. And Trey's absolutely right. But the fact is this: why is it that only the defensive players can't lead with their helmet? You're allowing offensive players, running back, tight ends, people like that to lead with their helmet.
Supposedly they're not allowed to. Right, that's the rule. I don't see it called very often.
Well, look, as I said, this will all be in our prioritizing player safety is as real as the Tooth Fairy report that we'll release later this year. Well, look, sticking with the league ownership meetings in Arizona, ownership of a prominent and historic football team could be changing, and that is Dan Snyder and the Washington Football Team Commanders, who are potentially up for sale. Two bids, I believe, have been met for that $6 billion price tag he put on it. Trey, the Dan Snyder era in the nation's capital has been nothing but rife with scandal, dysfunction, and disappointment. Are you ready for a new era of ownership in Washington, D.C.?
I think everyone is. I think everyone's been ready for a long time. I mean, let's just be clear. This is how bad the Daniel Snyder ownership era for the team has been. There's not a single coach that has worked for Dan Snyder that has a winning record. Not a single one. And we're going back to the 90s, guys, okay? There's not a single coach that Dan Snyder has employed that has had a winning record. So that tells you one of two things. Either he is awful at hiring coaches, or B, he is awful at empowering coaches to coach. And I'd say the actual answer is C, both of the above. Okay. Like Joe Gibbs, when he came back, didn't have a winning record. Joe Gibbs, a Hall of Fame coach who won Super Bowls with three different starting quarterbacks. Marty Schottenheimer, God rest his soul, was 8-8. That was the best record, and then was fired. It was 8-8 under Dan Snyder. Dan Snyder's team has underperformed, has been underwhelming, and it's been an absolute everywhere else. Okay, and this has been a long time in the making. I thought one of the most interesting things about the entire NFL owners meetings was a local DC reporter was asking Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins head coach, about what does he think about his former team being sold. And he's like, really? For that much money? And I couldn't get free coffee. And if you think about it, like that's a glib sort of throwing off the cuff remark. It may sum up Dan Snyder to perfection. I will squeeze every single penny out of you that I can. And oh, by the way, the team's going to suck because it doesn't matter because I just want to be richer. Have you ever heard Andrew Brandt's story about the
Snyder? Please tell.
It's one of the greatest of all time. So Andrew had a buddy in D.C. whose kids went to the same school as Dan Snyder. And so they had a sleepover, whatever, a get-together. I don't know what it was. So the parent went over to the Snyder's house to pick up his kids. And he's like, hi, Dan, I'm so-and-so. I'm so-and-so's parent. Nice to meet you. And Dan Snyder looked at this adult and said, it's Mr. Snyder to you. What a toolbox. I mean, get out of here, man. Like the league can't get rid of this guy fast enough. They just got to make sure. I mean, he's not even talking to the league investigators. Okay. This is once of him going to you guys. And it's, you know, the documents certainly seem to say that he hasn't even been paying these guys their fair share by moving money around. This can't happen fast enough. Dan Snyder needs to go away for
And by the way, I do remember Andrew telling us that story. I think he told it to us during the More Than Football podcast. You can go check that out on Apple, our Andrew Brandt episode. There's actually that, if I recall correctly, that was the Bruce Allen conversation we had with him, which left me feeling like this. Everything that Dan Snyder touches leaves me feeling like that. Tony, talking about Dan Snyder, what are your thoughts on this and what's going on with that ownership situation?
You know, it's funny you talk about Mike McDaniel about he couldn't get free coffee. If memory serves me right, the Washington franchise was the first that charged their fans to attend preseason practice about half a dozen years ago, maybe even more. The warning signs with Dan Snyder was there when he was getting on his private plane and flying around the country to scout quarterbacks, if you remember that about 10 years ago. I asked somebody in the league, when do they think that this sale will go down, if in fact it does go down? And they said May 12th. It will happen before May 12th. And I was like, well, why May 12th? They said, look at all the contracts that that Washington has signed in the offseason. The signing bonuses were pushed back to May 12th or later. They said that means something. So they said if in fact the sale happens, they believe it will be before May 12th. Keep that date in mind.
We certainly will. And not to forget that Mike McDaniel was there along with Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Mike Shanahan and Matt LaFleur.
Think about what you just said there. He had all those guys and he went a different direction. Not one of those guys was going to be the successor in Washington. I don't know what as an organizational flowchart or managerial abuse, I don't know what else sums it up better than that. All of those guys that have gone on to have a lot of success in the NFL as head coaches, suddenly none of them were good enough for Daniel Snyder.
He was so focused on Jay Gruden, but that's a different time for a different place. But before we get into, I mentioned Lamar Jackson before. I actually want to stay on this because it brings up a good point. Because Trey, you had mentioned that that Snyder may not even be cooperating with the league's investigation into the sexual harassment scandal that has embroiled this franchise the last couple of years.
Scandals.
And that's a violation of the conduct policy. If a player were to do that, they'd be suspended. Roger Goodell was asked about this, and he didn't seem to take a really strong stance on this. And Trey, you and I were texting back and forth, and Tony, I want your thoughts on this as well. Is Roger Goodell the highest paid target in the entire league for the ownership? Is he a willing target to take all of these arrows, knowing that he basically has to cover for his bosses in situations like this?
Exactly. And people do not know how good Roger Goodell is at his job. Okay. And people hate Roger. And I understand, you know, like he's the fallout, you know, he's the scapegoat. He's the guy that Chris Carter once said, have a guy that's going to take the heat for you in a rookie symposium. Who Roger is. That's who Roger is to the NFL. He's that guy. And he does it better than anybody else. Because all these things that we always talk about that make no sense, they don't come from Roger. They come from the 31 owners and the conglomerate that runs the Green Bay Packer organization. Okay? And it's his job to go out there and sell it. It's like that line from Trading Places. Get in there and sell! Where the hell is Beaks? You know? That's what Roger does. And he is a well-compensated target. Let's be clear. But I asked once around to a couple of people in the NFL, says, what is it that the owners love so much about Roger? And one of them said to me, nobody's better at herding the cats. And if you think about it, what we have here, we have Jerry Joneses. We have Daniel Snyders. We have Robert Krafts that own NFL football teams. These are very successful, very opinionated businessmen who think the world revolves around each and every one of them. Roger's ultimate gift is, well, he's a politician, right? That's his background. He came from state politics, his family. He is good at getting people together, getting these very strong-willed, opinionated billionaires together to come together for a common goal. That's the gift that Roger has that nobody really truly appreciates. I mean, he just got approved for another contract extension, and one of the guys that had no intention of doing it a few years ago was Jerry Jones. And guess who signed off on it now? Jerry Jones. Roger is really good at this, man. And you may not like the fact that for example, when Daniel Snyder was ignoring the congressional hearings, who stood in place? It was Roger Goodell, okay? Roger knows his job. I always say the two most important things you can be in life is know who you are and know who you're not. Okay. Roger knows who he is and he knows what his job is. and he's great at it.
And Tony, you know, every year at the NFL draft, Roger comes out, and it's like an annual tradition now where the entire crowd, no matter what city they're in, boos him relentlessly. Although notwithstanding everything that Roger does and understanding what his job is, what are your thoughts, you know, since he's become commissioner? Do you see and understand why he's getting the extension the way he is from these owners?
You know, Trey talks about how he brings everybody together. He also makes them billions and billions of dollars. I mean, look at the revenue that the league has brought in since Roger Goodell's taken over. And it's a never-ending source of money. So, yeah, absolutely. Funny story, though, and this is a true story, about how he takes the arrows and he doesn't publicly complain. About 10 years ago, I am leaving the NFL Combine, and I take an Uber from downtown Indianapolis to the airport. The Uber driver starts getting very chatty and talking, and the Uber driver, true story, tells me that he had just brought Roger Goodell to the airport, and Roger Goodell would not shut up about Daniel Snyder, about how much he disliked Daniel Snyder, about how much Daniel Snyder was a pain in the rear end, about how he wished Daniel Snyder would go away. But you, and that's a true story. You never hear Roger Goodell say that in public.
And that's a decade ago. Right.
And that
that's
is true.
That's a decade ago. That's 10 years ago. Think of how he feels about him now.
Well, but if you think about it, and you know, the other thing that people always miss with a commissioner is that they think he's a steward of the game. No. The last steward of the game for any sport commissioner was Kennesaw Mountain Landis in baseball when he got the Black Sox kicked out for throwing the World Series. Okay. There's no other steward of the game. The commissioner works for the owners. That's what he does. And if you look at the lineage of NFL commissioners, the last three have set the path for the NFL to be what it is today. Pete Rozelle was a salesman. He went out and sold the league. He made it something that people wanted to watch and wanted to have. Then Paul Tagliabue was a litigator. He was a lawyer. He made sure that CBA agreements were in place, that the NFL was strong against something like the USFL and all these other entities. He made the league legally sound and kept labor peace. We have had labor peace in the NFL since 1987. That can't be overstated, okay? We haven't had a disruption of what our addiction is. And then Roger is the politician. Roger is the guy who makes sure we try to put the positive spin on everything, and like we said, takes the arrows as the public figure for the deeds of those 31 other people and the conglomerate that runs the
group. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just labor peace. It's the NFLPA is a minor player. I mean, the NFLPA really has no power when you look at the deals that go down and the things that happen. The owners obviously have all the power. You look at, say, like baseball. You mentioned Kennesaw Lennis before. You look at the power that the baseball union has in Major League Baseball. And the NFLPA really doesn't have any of that. So it's not just he's a politician. He basically runs it, you know, behind the scenes with an iron hand, basically doing what the owners want.
To piggyback off of that, I mean, if the 31-plus Green Bay owners were a union, he's their union head. And he's doing a better job than the players' version of that. That's why we have two Thursday night football games this year per team. So,
but you want to know what's really weird? Like, you want to get really crazy about this? Every one of these NFL owners is a massive capitalist.
Yes.
Right? But they understand for their product to succeed, they run a socialistic business. They divide everything up. Like, the only reason Green Bay can compete with New York City and Miami and Los Angeles and San Francisco is because everyone gets the same share of the pie. Okay? So you have these uber capitalists that are, you know, well, you know, free markets, all this kind of stuff. They run their business like a socialist.
They do. For sure. Well, look, there's a good segue here because we're talking about the Washington ownership as a part of this and, you know, bringing it to the player level now. There's one prominent tagged free agent out there still looking for a team who released a statement as the league ownership meetings began. That's Lamar Jackson, that he actually officially requested a trade on March 2nd from the Baltimore Ravens a few days before they officially placed the tag on him, which means everything up until now that we've been talking about Lamar has been under the umbrella of the fact that he requested a trade from Baltimore. One of the teams that we've said should be inquiring about him is the Washington Commanders. How much of the ownership situation could be affecting the fact that Lamar hasn't received an offer from anyone, let alone them, Trey?
Well, if that's the one situation where I think that's plausible, I don't know if it's true, but okay. It's plausible. But here's what I would say to everybody who's saying mouth words about Lamar Jackson as an owner in the NFL or a general manager. I'm going to pull up the old Ron Burgundy Anchorman GIF. I don't believe you. Okay. I just don't believe you. For Martin Mayhew to sit up there and say what he said, the Commanders general manager, about the Lamar Jackson situation, I don't believe you. For Arthur Blank to say the things that he said about the Lamar Jackson situation, I don't believe you. I don't believe any of you.
Was particularly egregious compared to some of the others.
Yeah. For those that don't know, I said, well, you know, every game counts. Man, shut up. Michael Vick broke his leg. You never thought about not paying that guy. Like, get out of here. Okay. Like, there's no, everything that they're telling us is easily counteracted by simple other options. Okay. Well, you know, we can't pay the guy because he got hurt. Dak Prescott missed 12 games one year. He had no problem getting a contract. Joe Burrow tore up his ACL. No one was concerned about him. And, oh, I don't know. Injury prone. Give me a break. Baker Mayfield is going to be the starting quarterback in Tampa Bay. Baker Mayfield. Okay. Got a job. No problem. Sam Darnold, as my friend Tony likes to say, is going to be competing for the starting job in San Francisco until Brock Purdy's arm is make sure it's not falling off because of the elbow injury. These guys, really, over a 26-year-old former NFL MVP who's in his prime and has taken his team to multiple postseasons and has a postseason win. Everything we're hearing publicly can be easily counteracted by, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? I would have so much respect for any GM or any owner to simply come out there and say this. We'd love to have Lamar Jackson. But at the end of the day, we think if we put together this massive deal, the only thing that's going to matter is the Ravens will say, fine, we'll match it. And all of that will be for naught. If someone came out and said that, I would be tip of the cap to you, sir. But don't give me all this other crap, because it's just a load of crap.
Yeah. And Tony, Trey talked a lot about like what's being said publicly, and you know, I'm interested in what you think might be saying, you know, being said privately, you know, about the Lamar Jackson situation, beyond just the fact that the Ravens can match a contract. Is this a player that the league views the same way the public does?
Probably not, because of his playing style. We've talked about that. You know, his playing style does not lead to longevity, which is a concern. And as we've talked about on the show, I mean, it's gotten to this point because who is negotiating for Lamar Jackson? That's, we heard last week, the league sent out a memo that somebody who was supposed to be negotiating for him is not a certified agent. Don't talk to this guy. I will say this. If you're the new owner of the Washington Commanders and you want to endear yourself to the fans immediately, what better way to do it than offer Lamar Jackson a huge contract and steal him from a team that plays a couple hours north of you? So I mean, that is an interesting aspect of it. But again, you know, his playing style, that is the concern. The playing style does not lead to longevity. The running, the somersaults in the end zone.
Josh Allen, but Tony, Josh Allen does all of that. Josh Allen throws his body around, and he had no problem securing the bag. But
Josh Allen is also a lot bigger. And Josh Allen is a better passer than Lamar Jackson.
All those things are true. I'm just saying, Josh Allen throws his – like. He throws his body around with no fear of anything.
Yeah, the issue with Josh Allen there might not even be, you know, the size might be protecting him for now, but eventually those hits can come home to roost, you know, down the line too.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Well, look, let's stick here, because again, we had another player become a hot topic at the ownership meeting, not because of something he tweeted, but because he actually showed up there. He lives and trains there, and that's Odell Beckham Jr. Trey, what are your thoughts on OBJ still being on the free agent market and showing up to the league ownership meeting, presumably to continue negotiating with teams about a potential landing spot?
It's pretty simple. It means that he has an idea of what he's worth, and yeah. the teams have an idea of what they think he's worth. My old buddy Mark Schlereth used to always say about a player like this, I'd love to buy him for what we think he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth.
I like that.
Okay. Like that's the thing. I mean, and you know, Odell has come out there and said, no one said 20 million and that's fine. But and then he said, but I ain't playing for four. So, if he was a lock, he'd have a team by now. He's not a lock.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since Odell Beckham Jr. has been the Odell Beckham Jr. that secured the bag in New York. It's been a while. Okay. At least 3 or 4 years. And when he mercifully was traded away from Cleveland after that disaster and sort of found himself again with the Rams, that was great, but he got hurt again. And, you know, the problem is Adrian Peterson ruined ACL recoveries for everyone because in one December 24th, he tore his ACL and he was ready to go by week one the next season. And he came within, 7 yards of the single season rushing record of Eric Dickerson. So, you know, everyone is different. And Odell has had things like this before. So, you know, there's a real obvious answer in the Odell Beckham situation, but I'm not sure if he wants to hear it. It's go to Kansas City, be a hero for $7 million a year, and then you can do whatever you want for whomever you want. Because if Patrick Mahomes can turn TikTok star Juju Smith-Schuster into a $33 million contract for 1 year, imagine what he could do with Odell Beckham Jr. in Kansas City. And there is a glaring need for a wide receiver in Kansas City. I think they have three under contract. Yeah. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney. By the way, Kadarius Toney, they still have him on 3 years on a rookie deal if they want. Brilliant move by Brett Veach. Brilliant. But they got to have wide receivers. And if Patrick Mahomes could lead the league in passing yards and passing touchdowns, throwing to Juju Smith-Schuster, Justin Watson, Sky Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and others, imagine what he could do if he had Odell Beckham Jr. on that
team. Yeah, I agree. And look, the Chiefs, you know, they're such a fascinating thing because you know they're going to upgrade the position at some point. And you've got OBJ out there. You've got Hopkins out there.
D-Hop.
You know, and it's only a matter of time before something, you know, happens there. But Tony, on Odell Beckham Jr., is it more than just on the field that teams are worried about with him? You've brought up several times in the past, like, you know, he struggled really since the boat incident, right? What is it about him, you know, that maybe teams are concerned about bringing him into their locker room?
He's his own worst enemy. And that's it. I remember reporting as he was entering the draft at LSU, LSU people were telling me he's a diva receiver. He would show up to practice when he wanted to, but he was always excused from, you know, missing practice and meetings because he was so talented. And that is the issue is, you know, he thinks he's exceptional, but he, you know, it's the little things that he doesn't do. And he's his own worst enemy. He always has been. And that is a problem. I mean, you don't know what you're getting fully with Odell Beckham. A lot of players like him. A lot of the teammates really have liked him throughout the years. But you don't know if the guy is going to implode and you don't know, you know, what that's going to do in your locker room.
Do you guys think that what we saw at the end of the Antonio Brown saga in Tampa Bay is potentially scaring teams away from a vet move, bringing in a vet like Odell?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, Antonio Brown was such an outlier. I mean, we've had a lot of diva people that have not gone anywhere near the Antonio Brown route. Like Antonio Brown is so far removed from anything involving Odell. I don't even feel comfortable making that comparison in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think the issues with Brown go much deeper than they are with Odell Beckham. I mean, Odell Beckham is I don't think he's self-destructive the way Antonio Brown is. I think he's just basically his own worst enemy.
Yeah, the old school diva receiver, some might say. Okay. Lastly, before we get into, you know, more of the draft focused stuff, Bill Belichick, again, at the league ownership meetings, always great for a soundbite. He's always enthusiastic about being there. Trey, Bill Belichick, again, without Tom Brady the last 3 years, one playoff appearance, no playoff wins. Mac Jones, you know, may or may not be the guy they move forward with in the long term. What are your thoughts on Bill Belichick at the ownership meeting and what this could mean for him in the upcoming season?
Well, first of all, I love how much he hates answering questions. Like, I mean, it's fun. Like, and some of the questions, let's just be honest, they're dumb. They're dumb questions that you shouldn't be asking, because you're not going to get an answer. If you're doing it just to get a reaction as opposed to actually getting information. So some of that I think is silly. But I also was really taken by Bill's response when a legitimate question was asked. A legitimate question, which was, what do you say to Patriots fans who are a little nervous about how things are going, you know, over the last couple of seasons, and that you can get it fixed? And he paused and gave that sort of death stare. And he said, well, the last 25 years. And I was like, let me get this straight. The guy who was famous for, we're on to Cincinnati after a thrashing on a Monday night in Arrowhead by the Kansas City Chiefs. By the way, they went on to win the Super Bowl that year. The guy who has always said the past is in the past. The only thing that matters is going forward. And now he's trying to sell New England on, hey, look what I did before. Yeah. We're good. Well, now, 20-second timeout, okay? You did that with somebody who's not there anymore,
right?
Okay? And the two of you were the best. Brady and Belichick, maybe the greatest combination of coach and quarterback ever in the history of the NFL. In fact, I don't even think it's really debatable unless Andy goes for a long time with Patrick Mahomes, and then we can have that conversation. So now that guy's gone. And since that guy is gone, 2020 missed the playoffs. 2021, 10-7, and got destroyed in the wild card round by a team in your own division. And 2022 missed the playoffs. So suddenly Bill Belichick is reflective and resting on his laurels and counting on what had happened. This is the exact 180 of everything this guy has been about up until that question in his career. It's been about going here, not looking back. And I thought that was, I thought his answer was at the same time 100% accurate and 100% disingenuous.
Yeah. And Tony, you know, with Bill Belichick going into this year, do you think that answer is kind of sort of like a, I'm slowing down here, guys. I'm almost ready to be on my way out here.
It's got to be. I mean, you know, did Tom Brady overextend his stay in the NFL? You look at Aaron Rodgers, you got to look at Belichick too. I mean, are his best days behind him? You got to say yes. And, you know, they bring Bill O'Brien in there as the offensive coordinator, which is a genius move for a couple of reasons, because Bill O'Brien will be able to get the best out of Mac Jones as he has any other quarterback, and they have their coach in waiting. So, you know, I agree with you. It's just a matter of, when does Belichick decide to move on? The best days are behind him. They've got to, you know, retool and in some areas even rebuild. And you look at the rest of that division, the AFC East, with the Bills, with the Dolphins, potentially the Jets, everyone's caught up to him.
That's it. That's right. You know, for decades, literally two decades, he got to be at the top of that division with little to no competition at any time. And now that
forget competition, resistance. There was no resistance. Forget competition. There was no resistance. Yeah.
So certainly that's not the case anymore. You could argue they're the third, maybe the fourth best team in that four-team division. Okay, before we get into the draft, got to pay the bills. First up, want to give a big shout out to our big friends at Caesars Sportsbook. Still one of the best sports books for us to be talking about. There's still a ton going on around the sports world, and you can get involved in the action by going over to Caesars Sportsbook. Go over to Caesars.com and place your first wager. If you lose, you get 100% of your stake back as a free bet up to $1,250. And win or lose, you'll also get 1,000 reward credits, 1,000 tier credits. Redeem this offer using promo code PFNCZR at Caesars.com. Also, big shout out to our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. It's always fantasy football season with Underdog Fantasy best ball tournaments. Start drafting now and get up to $100 deposit bonus when you use promo code PFN at signup. UnderdogFantasy.com with the code PFN at signup and get a $100 deposit bonus. Okay, Tony, the NFL draft is literally about a month away here. That means teams are starting to really put together their draft boards and really hone in on the prospects they love, even as pro day season begins to come to an end. Let's start off with the most important names that we continue to hear about, and it is the most important position in sports. That is Bryce Young. What are teams saying about Bryce Young following the interviews he's had so far?
Love him. I mean, one general manager described him as a genius in those one-on-one interviews. They said the intellect that you see on the field transfers over into the interviews, into the, you know, when they do the whiteboard. They say he comes off as genuine. He's not one of these guys who tries to pass things off and he doesn't know what he's talking about, tries to BS his way through it. He's absolutely, as I said, was described as a genius. Wow. They said they talked about his upbringing. They said they absolutely love speaking with him. But the size is a concern. I mean, the 5'10" at the combine, the 204 pounds, wouldn't get on the scale at the pro day. As one GM said, if he was 6'2", he would be the best quarterback prospect to enter the draft of the past decade. That means over Deshaun, Patrick Mahomes, who was the 10th pick of the draft, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow. Doesn't mean he was going to turn out to be those guys, but they said at equal points, Bryce Young would have been graded higher than those guys. They absolutely love his play on the field. They love his intellect off the field when they speak with him. It's just a matter of who's going to draft the quarterback or how early is a quarterback that's 5'10", 204 pounds going to be
Trey, selected. You talked about Bryce Young's frame throughout this process. What are your thoughts on that, that teams are having concerns about that size?
He's slim. He's slender. Like Russell Wilson is a stocky 5'10".
He's big. He's thin.
Like Russell Wilson is thickly built. You know, even Kyler Murray, okay, as short as he is, he's thicker than Bryce. That is the concern. He looks like Devontae Smith. Yeah,
the Slim Reaper.
Like that, if we're being honest. And look, I know he's a few pounds heavier, but that's the concern. You know, when RG3 came into the league in 2012, people were talking about how fast he was. And he was absolutely fast, but he was a slim guy, okay? And slim led to a lot of problems for RG3, a lot of injuries. And, you know, there's a reason that he's now talking about football, and the guy was taken three rounds later than him by the same team in 2012 has made gazillion dollars in Kirk Cousins because he, you know, the slimness caught up to him. And Kirk Cousins isn't even big, but he has a much bigger frame than RG3. And so it, you know, we're talking about, you know, how Lamar Jackson and all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, if you're not Lamar Jackson fast and you have a slim frame like that, and by the way, Lamar Jackson is much bigger than Bryce Young. Let's be clear about that. Is that frame built for it, right? I think that's the concern everybody has.
Yeah, Drew Brees, another guy who's a shorter guy, but was stocky and stouter. I mean, the story of Drew Brees, an interesting one, was at the combine, he actually measured 5'117", which meant he would have been under 6 foot tall. But the scout who measured him gave him an even 6 foot. But again, he was a shorter guy, especially at the time. But he was a stouter, stockier guy who had a long, productive career in the NFL.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the
holds every regular season record there is, or did until, you know,
Tom Brady. One of the size comparisons that I noticed for Bryce Young is Pat White. They're almost identical height, almost identical, you know, frame and. You know, similar issues there, you know, with Bryce Young. By the way, a little trade secret. The reason Bryce Young weighed in at the combine and didn't throw is because he put weight on. He probably weighs less than 200 pounds. The reason he didn't weigh in at the pro day but did throw is because he probably lost that weight and went back to performing and playing with
it. But that's him understanding the system. Playing the game. Like I respect the hustle there. He did what he needed to do in both of those situations to come off as best as possible. Yeah.
And I think we need to get a little bit, you know, involved in the detail of that. What happens now is the NFL scouts will measure and weigh these guys right before their workout. What used to happen is when the guys arrived at the combine, the first thing they did was the weigh-ins.
Yeah.
So by the time they got to the combine, a lot of them would drink as much water as they could to get their weight up. So they were heavier if they needed to be during weigh-ins. And then they would get rid of all that water weight and be lighter for their workouts. You can't do that anymore because now the teams measure and weigh you right before you work out.
Well, just so how prevalent that is, I tell you a funny story. My son played college football as an offensive lineman. He was always on the lighter side, and he was a little concerned. So one year he went in and put some weights actually in his shorts. Yep. Add 10 pounds of weight. And the coach is like, oh, good job. He took him out. So this happens everywhere all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, there's another quarterback that's been in the conversation for the number one pick. Tony, you reported that C.J. Stroud is one of the quarterbacks that might be high up on the board for the Carolina Panthers, who are now sitting there at number one following a trade with the Chicago Bears. What are teams saying about C.J. Stroud at this point?
Yeah, well, as far as his interviews are concerned, it's come off very well. Very honest. He's admitted mistakes in the past. And what mistakes in the past I'm talking about? You know, he came to Ohio State as a high recruit. He was the go-to guy. And then what he's talked about in interviews is he really woke up when Coach Ryan Day brought Quinn Ewers in after he was at Ohio State. And that was a wake-up call for him to say, hey, listen, I got to work because – I may not be the number one guy here. And that sort of honesty and the fact that he was able to realize what was going on, and he eventually became the number one guy at Ohio State, as we saw, and Quinn Ewers then transferred to Texas. That honesty and that ability to see what was going on or what's happening has really impressed scouts. They say he's very mature. He's come off very well. And, you know, you want that if you're going to take a guy with the first pick, because he's going to be the face of your franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. Trey, C.J. Stroud, to me, honestly, he's the guy I would take number one because of those size concerns over Bryce Young. Have you had a chance to watch his game? What are your thoughts on it so far?
The thing about C.J. is, and Tony knows this, a lot of people are first-round picks is that they're box checkers, right? Like Bryce Young doesn't check some boxes, and that concerns you. C.J. Stroud checks almost every box, and if you're one of those talent evaluators that is concerned about CYA, then C.J. Stroud makes a lot of sense. And I'm not saying he doesn't make a lot of sense, even regardless of that, but that C.J. Stroud doesn't have a variable that Bryce Young has. Okay, there's a variable with Bryce Young that does not enter the equation with C.J. Stroud. And, you know, we've seen him make every single throw available. And Tony, you talked about it at the combine. There were a couple of those intermediate throws, right, that were of a concern. And we all fall in love with the big arm throws. And, you know, you see it every year. This guy threw 60 yards on his knees. Or Justin Herbert, I think a few years ago, flat-footed from the goal line. Well, no one throws flat-footed from the goal line. Those intermediate throws that Tony was talking about, those are the ones that move the chains. Those are the ones that keep drives alive. Those are the ones that make Patrick Mahomes Patrick Mahomes. There's a lot of quarterbacks in air and out 60 yards and throw it to Tyreek Hill. They can do that. But can you make the throws wide side of the field, outside of the hash, inside of contested windows that keep drives alive on second and third down? Those are the things that matter more than anything else.
Absolutely. And with CJ, to your point about the CYA and the box checking, if you take Bryce Young and it doesn't work out, the first thing fan bases are going to say is, why would you take a guy who weighs that little, who's that light, whose frame is that small?
Exactly.
And that's, you know, where I think where you're going with risk versus reward in the way these players get picked. Well, look, there's another quarterback. This is the quarterback segment of the show, apparently, because we're talking about Will Levis. Will Levis has the size. Yeah. Will Levis has the arm. Twitter seems to think Will Levis is really good. Tony, is the reality on Will Levis around the league the same as the way it is on Twitter?
Perfect segue from what Trey was talking about the big arm quarterbacks. Yeah. And the answer is no. I mean, if you watched the pro day last week, that the film clips that went viral on Twitter and all over the internet were those deep throws down the left side of the field, 40, 45 yards that he threw on a dime. Magnificent throws, generational type throws that only a few quarterbacks can make. But it's more than that. Teams are concerned that he's just showing off his strong arm. He hasn't learned to throw the shorter passes. He can't set up screen throws. He tries to throw the ball through everyone. I had someone tell me that even when they're practicing corner patterns and fade patterns, you know, rather than toss the ball up in the air, he's trying to throw dimes. He's trying to throw the ball through people. And then what also happens is, what you don't see in pro days, what scouts are very worried about, is he doesn't seem to have a good feel. He doesn't seem to have good pocket presence. He doesn't see the field very well. So everyone gets all wrapped up in these great, you know, 40, 45-yard throws that he makes down the field on a dime. And those are important, but you're only going to make those throws a couple of times each game. It's more involved. And again, this is not Tony Pauline hating on Will Levis. This is just looking at the entire story that Will Levis needs a lot of work on his game. He is a guy who, as a lot of people in the league have told me, he's all arm. It's not going on too well between the ears, and he doesn't know how to throw the touch passes, and he doesn't know how to feather the ball out to throw a catchable pass at times. That is a main concern. He could be drafted very early, but you talk to league people and they say, no, he's a middle round one type guy. And I agree with that totally.
Yeah. And listen, I'm going to say something here. I'm not trying to bury Will Levis, but when I heard you say that, the first person that came to mind was Zach Wilson. Mm. Okay.
Sure.
Like Zach Wilson. Oh my God, look at the arm and all this kind of stuff. And we've talked about this before. Remember when he got hurt in the preseason, Garrett Wilson spoke the quiet thing out loud. When he talked about Joe Flacco, he said, well, Joe throws a more catchable ball. Like, it's not just about, you know, you've got to make something that the receiver can work with. And it sounds like from what Tony was saying, that some of the problems that Zach Wilson encountered at the next level might be problems for Will Levis as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, with Zach Wilson, we've also talked about some of the stuff between the ears, and we've talked about some of the attitude stuff. Some of the things I've heard about Will Levis is, you know, he might be a little bit too concerned with marketing himself than he is about playing football. And so all of these things combined, you know, we'll see where he ends up going. But as we know, it only takes one team to fall in love with that arm and think they can coach the rest. So he could, you know, really fall anywhere else. There is a player who I don't think a lot of people were talking about for round one, but one of our good friends, all three of us are friendly with him, and Mr. Mike Tannenbaum, recently had Hendon Hooker going top five, not top five quarterbacks, top five in the first round of the NFL draft. And he, you know, he made some very valid football points, Tony, but I am interested on your take and what the reality is that we could see him be a top half of round one type of quarterback.
I struggled to see it, but I like Hendon Hooker. I've been consistent about Hendon Hooker all along. I think he's in the best position of any of the quarterbacks in this draft. Hendon Hooker right now is rated my number three quarterback after Bryce Young and after TJ Stroud. Doesn't mean I think he's going to come off the board. He will be the third quarterback to come off the board, but I fully believe two or three years down the road, he could be the third best quarterback in this draft. Now, why is that? Well, he was a better quarterback in 2022 than he was in 2021. He was a better quarterback in 2021 than he was in 2020. So there's an upward slant on his progression. He's a smart guy. He showed the ability to lead Tennessee the past 2 years. And the fact is, as devastating as that injury was, in the long term, it could actually help his career. And that's because he's not going to be a top 12 pick. He's not going to be relied upon to start in 2023 for a team. He's going to have to sit on the sidelines and observe and absorb. And, you know, we saw what that did for Patrick Mahomes. There used to be a time where rookie quarterbacks were always redshirted. Doesn't seem to happen anymore. It's going to happen with Hendon Hooker because of the circumstances. you know, do I think he could be a first-round pick? I could see late in round one, maybe a team trading up to get Hendon Hooker. I think he'll be off. If he doesn't get go late in round one, he'll be off the board by the top half of round two. You know, I understand everybody wants a guy like him wants to be a top 10 pick with the contract and everything. But I think for the longevity of it, he's in the best position of any quarterback because he's got the talent. He's got it going on between the ears. And he now is in a situation where he's not going to be put into onto the field, forced on the field, and expected to lead a team as a rookie when he may not be ready.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I think you're right, Tony. In the long run, this will benefit him as a player. But just out of your curiosity, in your opinion, with everything you know, how much did the injury knock him down from where he might go?
Oh, he probably lost at least a half round, if not a full round.
Yeah.
In the sense that if he doesn't get injured, and then he'd say he continues to play well, and then he goes to the Senior Bowl, which Will Levis didn't go to, which has raised a lot of red flags. He plays well at the Senior Bowl. He's a top 10 pick, Hendon Hooker. The way it stands now is you're looking at, in my opinion, late first round, early second.
Really interesting. There is one more quarterback I want to get to before we kind of switch gears here to close the show out. And I always, you know, these three named players, I always screw up, so I want to get this right. But that's Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I will not say that five times fast because I'll make a fool of myself. But Tony, what's the latest on him? And is he continuing to rise as he was earlier in the process?
We spoke about him last week as one of those, you know, not highly rated quarterbacks or not the top of round one quarterbacks that's getting a lot of steam. And the only reason I want to revisit this is because the Minnesota Vikings were one of the teams that I mentioned last week as someone who has an interest in them. And since last week's show, I've been told that the interest from the Minnesota Vikings is off the wall on Thompson Robinson. What does off the wall mean? I don't know that they're going to take him in round three, but if he's there in round four, they absolutely will. You got Kirk Cousins there, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. You take your time to develop him. And as I said last week, there are some people who believe that he will be the best value at the quarterback position in this year's draft because of his tool, because of his upside, because he's not going to be taken within in the first 60 picks of the draft.
Wow. It would be funny if he went to Minnesota as a fourth-round pick because Kirk Cousins was a fourth-round pick in 2012 and has made quite a career out of himself and now playing for the Minnesota Vikings. I just want to say one thing here before we wrap up. We're talking a lot about quarterbacks, right? And we haven't even mentioned Anthony Richardson. I think this year is a real test for the NFL draft in terms of the product of the draft. Not the players, but the product, the entertainment of the draft. Since 2020, the draft has lost a third of its viewership.
Oh, wow.
In 2020, we had 15 million people watch. Last year, it was about 10 million people. And quarterbacks drive that a lot. It's been a couple of down years for quarterbacks. It hasn't really been great. But we have Tom. We have Bryce Young. We have Will Levis. We have Anthony Richardson. We have C.J. Stroud. We mentioned Hendon Hooker. You know, all these quarterbacks, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson, that are going to be in the mix. If the draft numbers don't uptick from 10 million this year, I think the NFL has an issue with how they process the draft. It's not a TV show anymore. It's a live stream because people are getting that information faster than they can put it out on television.
Yeah,
and if with all this quarterback drama in this year's draft, if the ratings don't rise from next year, I think the NFL has to take a long, hard look at how they produce the draft and how they put the product out there.
And I'll be surprised if the ratings are not off the roof this year. And the reason is this: you mentioned all the quarterbacks. You also have indecision with the first pick of the draft. Now, last year we had a little bit of indecision with the first pick with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But that was with a defensive player.
Correct.
Now you have indecision at the quarterback position, and you've got three of the top four picks in the first round that need quarterbacks. So I would be surprised. And you know darn well the league is going to tell the Carolina Panthers, don't even consider leaking out which way you may be going until you're on the clock. So I think that indecision coupled with the quarterbacks at the top will help drive the ratings.
If it doesn't,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah. By the way, 2008, Bill Parcells signed Jake Long to a contract a week before the draft.
Yep.
And the NFL's like, nope, never again. Never again, because we got a show to put on.
If anybody knows how to produce the NFL draft for TV, it's you, Trey. So that carries some weight. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye out and see what that looks like. But before we close out, Tony, every year there are players who get taken in the first round where you go, wow, I didn't think he was going to go that high. Who are two players that could be surprise first round selections in this year's draft?
Yeah, and we're going to get away from the quarterbacks. And a lot of crazy things happen at the end of round one. Like you said, you know, there are guys that, you know, people aren't looking at as potential first rounders end up in the bottom half of round one. Two defensive players, Will McDonald of Iowa State, the outstanding athletic pass rusher who played a variety of different positions. If you were on Pro Football Network, I mentioned his pro day report, ran 4.62 in the 40 wearing a short sleeve hoodie. And the joke was if he wore a regular T-shirt without the resistance, he would have gotten under 4.6. I'm hearing that he could end up late in round one. Philadelphia Eagles always looking to draft for the future. Brandon Graham's been there for, 14 years now? Kansas City Chiefs need an edge rusher. Selected George Karlaftis. He'd be a good fit there. Dallas Cowboys are thinking about it. He'd be a good fit for the Dallas Cowboys system, although they have Micah Parsons there. So Will McDonald could be a guy who sneaks into the late part of round one. our friend, and I'm going to try and not butcher his name, Adamotibi Adewale from Northwestern, the big defensive lineman. I have heard since the Senior Bowl, since his tremendous performance at the Senior Bowl, that he's a guy who could sneak into the late part of round one. That chatter is getting louder and louder from teams that I've spoken with. You look at the New Orleans Saints that still have a need at the defensive tackle position. They have the 29th pick at the draft. Yeah, they signed two defensive tackles in free agency, Kalen Saunders and Nate Shepard. The New Orleans Saints defensive line coach went out to individually work out Adam Awabi, took him out to dinner. You got some other teams like the Arizona Cardinals who have an early second round pick. If they really like him, they move into the first round. You got the Detroit Lions who need a defensive tackle. We talked about it last week. That sixth pick is where the Jalen Carter watch will start. If they don't take him with six, I don't think they take him at 18, but if there are offers for them to move down, get some extra selections, and they can move down to the bottom part of round one, that'd be a perfect fit. So Will McDonald of Iowa State, Adam Otiwe Adewale out of Northwestern, two defensive players who could sneak into the late part of round
one. The end of round one is always full with a ton of action as teams who are picking early or mid round two want to sneak up and get a player they didn't think was going to be there. So we will definitely keep our eyes peeled for that and for all of the quarterback moves that could happen. Finally, throughout this draft, Tony, felt like we sat there for hours, you and I, last year, waiting for a quarterback to go after Pickett did.
It's because you did.
Exactly. It felt like it happened. That being said, guys, great to be back. Appreciate you both joining me each and every single week. As we get closer to the draft, we will have much more information to share with you. Information you can only get here from Pro Football Network because we have a Tony Pauline. That's like saying, like, we have a Hulk. We have a Tony Pauline. And of course, we have a Trey Wingo as well, who keeps it fresh for us each and every week. We will see you next week. Take care.